Welcome to another edition of Simons Says, a podcast devoted to conversationalists and the curious-minded. Here's your host, me, the follically challenged Dave Simons, certified financial planner and all-around nice guy.
Hello again, everybody. So, I am a sucker for a good success story. I mean, who is it? One of these rags-to-riches stories. I think it's kind of in our American spirit, right? And when I think about some of the classic success stories, let's start with Kurt Warner, should we? I think we in St. Louis know a little bit about this guy. I mean, we all know the details. I don't have to recite all of them, but basically, the guy can't get a cup of coffee leaving Northern Iowa after setting all kinds of records. He famously is stocking shelves in a supermarket in his home state of Iowa, and then eventually he kind of finds his way through the Arena Football League in Europe, and you know the whole story, ends up with the Rams. And then years later, he finds himself in the National Football League Hall of Fame. How does that happen? Or on the corporate side, there are a lot of people who kind of fit this description. How about these brainiacs, these geniuses who go off to college and they're bored because it's too easy? Not a problem that I ever had. They're smarter than their professors. So they end up going back home, and in their garage, they start tinkering with things. And before they know it, we've got this technological innovation that revolutionizes the world. And you think, how does that happen? The guy drops out of college. Or how about this one? Eight people gather in a living room in a St. Louis suburb. And they really don't have necessarily some defined vision. It's more questions. It's more, we've got questions about life. We've got questions about God, about eternity. What does the Bible say? They all are from different backgrounds. And what they decided is, wouldn't it be nice to have a safe place for people who have questions like we do to get together and ask the questions? And we'll take people from any background, any faith. We'll take people who don't even have a faith. We'll take people who might even say they're atheists, but they're interested. That's the kind of gathering that we want. Eight people in a living room in a St. Louis suburb in 1989. Fast forward to today, nearly 35 years later, and thousands of people now call this church home. And that's just in the physical buildings, and there are several of them around St. Louis. Thousands more online, and we're talking around the world. You know, people from every continent at one time tune in to see a live service on the weekend, and including Antarctica. That is true. This is amazing to me. And my friends, this is a church that has had an impact around the world. First of all, starting here in St. Louis, going into areas that have been really underdeveloped for decades and having an impact. Going into places like Africa. You can go to some countries in Africa and talk to some of the church leadership there and tell them about this church, and their eyes light up. You're from that church? I know. I speak from personal experience. I've seen that reaction. You go to places like in Central America through like an organization like Living Water, and you tell them, oh yeah, I attend this church back in St. Louis. These folks couldn't point St. Louis on a map, and yet they would say, I know that church. That's the Water Church. I've personally heard that as well. So how does that happen? Eight people, not even knowing where they're going with this, but just asking questions, in 1989, has morphed into one of the most influential churches, not just in the U.S., but around the world. Well, I think I've got the right person who's going to help us fill in some of those details. A person who wasn't one of the original eight, but he and his wife joined up with this still very small church just a few years later. And in fact, this man would become its pastor shortly after that, and now has been the lead pastor of this church for 25 years. And oh, by the way, he had a path to go into the corporate world and probably be very successful, but instead, he chose to be the pastor of a church that he wasn't even sure if he was going to get paid. How does that happen, and why? I'm speaking about The Crossing, once called Windsor Crossing, and its lead pastor, who is my guest today on the Simon Says podcast, Greg Holder. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. So we've got a lot to cover
First of all, in a short amount of time. I just want to apologize to your viewers for not being Kurt Warner. You were setting that up, and I know, but I'm really thrilled to be here.
I thought about that as I was going through that. I thought, oh, he's got Kurt Warner on.
Yeah, sorry, folks.
Just maybe slightly below is Greg Holder.
Just slightly.
So, okay, so 1989, I kind of set that up.
Yeah.
When did you and Robin, your wife, first attend this new fledgling church?
Yeah, that's a great question. So so these eight people, let's start it that way. So these eight people who are all, I'm going to use the term Christ followers. So they have a faith, and they start asking those questions you were talking about. And little by little, they're trying to figure out, how do we do this? Well, they together began to invest their money in saying, well, let's bring in a couple of church planters to help with this. And so they do that, and they go from the living room now to inviting some of their friends, and they get to an apartment clubhouse. So now I'm guessing, we're not there yet, I'm guessing maybe a couple of dozen people at this point. And so they start inviting other people in. One of those people that finds out about them is my dear friend, our friend, Russ Kirkland. And so Russ was a local record producer and a musician, toured nationally with some bands. And Robin and I used to do some voice work for him here in St. Louis, recording things, singing things in his studio. Russ was an early part of what was called Windsor Crossing, you're right. And then eventually he invites us to come and to help on the music side of things. Now, what's interesting, and I don't tell this part of the story very often, there was a kind of a public launching of this concept of a church, which is exactly what you said. Can we create a place that is safe enough for people who, the way I would then come to term it, is over-churched or unchurched? So either people who have completely given up on this thing, or people who have never, ever stepped inside of a church. So it's still in the conceptual stage. You've got, I don't know, maybe now you've got 50 people. Mm. But they rent the theater at the YMCA behind Chesterfield Mall here in St. Louis. They rent that on a Sunday night. It's a one-shot deal. And they invited people in the community to come, and the night was called Celebrate the Difference. And so you got a lot of people that were very curious, even other church people that were very curious, going, what's going on? What is this about? Is this thing for real? Is it theologically sound? All of that. Well, they had a whole program where they were going to explain some things. They even had a drama that they did and worship. They had great worship. This church from the very beginning had amazing, amazing music because of Russ and because of his connections and Dale, his sister. Well, what I don't usually tell this part of the story, we're not a part of the church at this point. But he said, Robin, will you come help us lead worship that night? So Robin was really there at what I'm going to call the first public service of this church that is still kind of in the conceptual stage.
Talking about your wife, who has an amazing, beautiful voice.
Yeah. So that's really where we first got kind of wind of what this thing could be. It's still really in the early stages. We began to help them then as they started trying things on Sunday nights, still very small. And Robin and I would come. Now, this is the early 90s. We would come and help lead worship. We were still a part of another church. I was in a leadership position at another church. But we would then come on Sunday nights and pour into this because we, in our hearts, longed for a place like the one they were describing. Mm. A safe place where you could bring people and people could ask questions. So that's really where we started, was in the early 90s. That's kind of where that happened.
And then you're there for, I love this part of the story, which I kind of referenced. You're there for a little bit, and all of a sudden, what, you don't have leadership, but you had a pastor that left, and now, how to describe how that played out.
So to fast forward through that, we officially, Windsor Crossing officially started having church on Sunday mornings in 1994. And
when still at the happened, Y.
No, this is, we had moved to Marquette High School.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it was, you know, at the, it's like any church that is portable. You're looking for where's your best place to do stuff. So wherever we are, we're putting things out and tearing them down every Sunday morning, mm-hmm. right? So we, at that point, made the commitment to say, we can't have a foot in two boats. We love this church. We love what this church is doing. We prayed about it, and we threw our lot in with Windsor Crossing Community Church. So we're all in now in 94. 96, 95, one of the church planters left and went to another church. And then at the end of 96, the second of the two church planters left. And I would just say, I think part of that was it was never really taking off. Mm. It was there were great people there, but I think some folks would get maybe even discouraged. It's like, oh, I thought this was going to work. And then there was a little kind of a turning over of what I would call the core of the church. People would come in, and then they would go, okay, this isn't working, and then they would leave. And there was a lot more to that. But then in 97, the church is without leadership. Now, I'm on as a volunteer. You would call me, I guess, an elder at that point. I'm working in the marketplace, and Robin and I are still here. My background was a psychology degree, a master's in counseling. That's what I was doing. I was working for an organization at that point, a Christian organization that had inpatient and outpatient clinics. So I had a chance to really use my education, but also to express my Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Part of what was happening there, and we will not bore folks with this part of the story, but I think God had been calling me to this role pretty much my whole life. And I had been putting it off because I had personally experienced, for the most part, churches that were, they were not relevant to my friends who were outside the faith. There was no way they could ask those kinds of questions we're talking about. And then the second big thing, Dave, was pretty dysfunctional. I was in some churches that were just not, they just didn't treat each other well. And, you know, I've written about this, and I kind of wrote off the church as broken for a long time. And it wasn't until we got to Windsor Crossing that we began to fall back in love with the church because we saw how this worked. Specifically, I saw how it worked in a relationship between Robin and a neighbor of ours that we began to invite. And she begins to develop her own faith, and all of a sudden, we're realizing, wait, the church isn't broken. This can work. So God's calling me deeper and deeper into this. By mid-1997, the board of directors at Windsor Crossing had had gone through a whole bunch of candidates. I'm an elder. I'm pretty sure, Dave, at this point, I'm being called into ministry, okay? I'm pretty sure it's not going to be at Windsor Crossing. So what I told them at that time was, let me help, because I would teach on weekends from time to time, even before that pastor left, just to give him a break. But I said, let me help kind of hold this thing together. You guys go out there and find the person that you're looking for. And I'm going to go. I've got a couple of opportunities, and one of them would be like as a teaching pastor at a church here in the Midwest, fairly large, you know, established church. I can go do that. I'll go help them.
You know, I have to say something. I'm sitting here almost wanting to just laugh, because I know how the story plays out.
Yeah.
And I go back, and I'm picturing where you are, and I'm like, Greg, if you only knew what's about
isn't that
to
it?
Happen.
Isn't that
it's
it?
It's something, but
well,
we're going to fill in the details.
So here's the thing, without belaboring it too long, what I think you're speaking to is really the story of my life, which is how patient God has been with me. So, you know, I will kind of deviate off the path, and he pulls me back and gives me opportunities that I don't deserve. And I would say the largest of those opportunities was when we began to talk with the board, and they said, no, we'd like for you to stay. And I was like, yeah, I don't know that folks are going to buy into that. Now, when I say folks, at this point, it had dwindled down to about, I'm going to say around 100 people.
Okay.
We had, in, at our highest peak, we'd probably had 200, 250, maybe on Easter.
It really was starting to die
bit. No, it had really tapered off in that time when there was no leadership, which makes sense. You know, people are going, okay, so this really isn't going to work. And I would just say, you know, to wrap this part of the story up, Robin and I prayed really hard about it, talked with people on the board who were our dear friends, and made that commitment. And I became the pastor in August of 1997. And, you know, you alluded to something, and it makes it sound really noble on my part, but it wasn't, I don't think. But yeah, the finances were such that the board said, we can pay your salary through the end of next month, but we've got to keep seeing something happen here. And that was okay with me. It was kind of like that Martin Luther quote where he says, "Here I stand, I can do no other." Mm. God had just brought us to this place where it was like, okay, this is what you're going to have, this broken, ill-prepared, passionate guy do, and okay.
But about the same time, back in your regular career, psychology and all that, didn't you at about that same time have an opportunity to go down to Texas to continue something like
that? Well, when I said that Robin and I had learned something, and I might have even said I know I often say this, we fell back in love with the local church because I'd kind of given up on that concept. I never had a deep, dark detour. You know, I don't have that chapter in my life. But when we saw this play out in real time with a friend of ours, and it's like, no, God's still changing lives. He's still in this business, and it's still happening in a local church. It was about that time that in my previous role, I was being told, we'd like for you to come back to basically headquarters in Texas for a promotion, and they were talking about that, gearing me up for that. And that's when I said no. That's when I said, you're going to think I'm crazy, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm being called into ministry. And then when it, you know, not long after that, when we began to see some things happening, and I gave my, you know, my notice there and said, guys, I'm really going to do this. Now this is a Christian organization, right? Mm-hmm. So they're celebrating and they're like, okay, if this is, you've prayed about this, right? Yeah. But still it was, are you sure?
Yeah, I see that.
Are you sure? And it's okay. I wasn't insulted by that at all because it's true. People would, are you sure? Now, the people at little old Windsor Crossing at that time, I think they had some of those people had that reaction too.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to a place now where we're going to do this. And we are announced. And some of the people are really excited. And it's like, okay, let's go. There were other people. Now, remember how small we were. There were other people who were like, really? That's like, you're the best that the board could come up with after this almost 8-month search. That you're it. And so Robin and I would have dinner every Sunday night with a different family of the church. We just made the rounds. And I would share what I thought our vision was and where I believed God was leading us and some opportunities that we hadn't really fully chased down. This is where I really began to feel like God was saying, okay, lead. And we would have those dinners every Sunday night. And Dave, I'm telling you, some of them were amazing, mm-hmm. and people are like, we're with you. And some of them, people looked at us and said, we're out.
Yeah.
They made a mistake. You're not the guy. I remember one not easy dinner. We would just be on the hot seat. Well, what are you going to do? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? And it was, we were trying to share these things. We got out in the car. We hadn't even left their house. We're in the car. It was parked on a tree-lined street. I remember it vividly. And we got in the car that night, and just as soon as the door shut, it was like a movie scene. You know, we're very serious. Thank you. We got in the car. And we began to laugh so loudly because it was
you're going to cry. You laughed.
It was beyond crying. It was so absurd that I looked at her and I said, "Well, that couldn't have gone any worse, could it?" And she goes, "Nope." And I said, "I don't think they'll be back."
Yeah. Wow.
Now, to put a PS on that story, though, they hung in there.
Oh, great.
And their faithfulness was so beautiful over time. But they needed to go in ahead and just let out all of their frustrations, right? All of the stuff that they had. People were just wondering if this could work. And so by God's grace, it did, Dave. I mean, you know, it did. And it wasn't me. It was just a combination of amazing people that he put in our lives I would just say a resolve.
Mm-hmm.
A resolve to say, "Now we think St. Louis deserves a place like this. We know there are other churches where God's doing amazing things. We still say that. We know we're not for everyone. We still say that. We just want you to be plugged in a faith community and growing, learning, and getting stuff done. The world needs difference makers. So we're not saying everybody has to come to what then became the Crossing, but he certainly surrounded me with a bunch of people who said, "No, let's do this." And that's how it began to take off.
Greg, you touched on this, and I think this is something that's really important that I want to talk to you about. You said that you were at a church before that, frankly, there was some dysfunction. You didn't want to be part of the church for a while. You had to fall back in love with it. You gave a message recently where you looked out into the audience and you basically said, "People have lost trust in our institutions."
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yes.
Whether it's government, whether it's the media, whether it's the healthcare profession. I mean, we can go down the list. And then you did something interesting. You kind of paused and you said, "What else? What am I missing?" And I heard somebody yell, "The church," or it was religion or something like that. And you kind of said, "Bingo," like that's what you were fishing for. And I thought, wow, the honesty of you to say that, to say you're part of an industry and a profession that is also broken, and I'm sorry. And this is what I want you to address, because you have said this before. I've seen you talk to others who have been hurt by the church. They equate that with God in some way too, where you've been hurt by people, you've not been hurt by God. And one of the first things that you say to someone is you apologize. And you say, "First, let me tell you, I'm sorry."
Yeah.
This is a real thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And one of the reasons why the Crossing grew is because they came to a place and said, "Oh, I don't think I'm going to be hurt here, because they will allow me to bring my junk and won't judge me, and they will listen to me."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so first thing, yes, it is a reality that one of the reasons there's an erosion of trust in churches at large, it's some of the horrible headlines that we've seen over the years, but then it's just this underbelly of, sometimes we don't treat each other well, and those things don't make it to a headline, but it still hurts and it still scars, and somebody still goes, "Oh, so that's who you guys are? I'm out." And Dave, I want to be really clear here. We are an imperfect church led by an imperfect staff, and we at any moment have the potential to bruise and to get in the way of somebody's journey ourselves. We know that. We have to always say that. And then when our humanity flares, we need to be really quick to say, "Hey, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me?" See, I think a lot of what happens is something happens and then everybody glosses it over, or they won't talk about it. And then it kind of scars over. And then before you know it, it gets normalized. And that's just the way you do things. It can't be the way we do things. When we hurt each other, I don't think we should be surprised. But I don't think we should ignore it, and we shouldn't normalize it. That is not the teaching of Jesus. And it became something that was really a part of our DNA. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what we do is we just admit that. And there's another word I used that weekend. Because I know there are people who go, "I don't know. What do I do? I can't take that thing away that happened to you." No, but you know what you can do? And it's thoroughly biblical. You can lament with them. Mm-hmm. You can sit down next to somebody. And it is the I'm sorry. I can't even imagine the hurt. I can't even imagine it. I can't imagine how confusing that is when this happens or that happens and somebody did this. And you know, one of the phrases that we sometimes use is don't transplant somebody else's head onto the shoulders of God. Mm-hmm. And it's real easy to confuse and to pull back. And yeah, so I hope, Dave, I hope that what you're saying is true, that people experience a safety where we can talk about it, we can admit it.
You even have a class, ICU, that's set up specifically for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And knowing full well, again, that we are people that can inadvertently hurt and distract other people from their own spiritual progress. We know that. So, but yes, this is an opportunity for people to say, okay, how do I move forward?
Yep.
I think the best part of that, though, and my guess is you'll get there. You're probably right on it, but it's, to me, the most encouraging thing out of all of this is that God didn't just teach us, oh boy, we can't do that. You know, I mean, we did. We kind of vowed that we weren't going to do it that way. We vowed that we were going to do it differently. But then over time, God led us to what has now become a course that we teach our folks. Here's the plan. Here's the way we're going to do this. And here are some ways that we can actually build that kind of safe community, not perfect community, but a safe community where we teach these principles and these concepts really to anybody who wants to get involved at a deeper level. It's required. It's like you gotta understand this is how we do things here. And so that, you know, what we now call a Genius of One course, which reaches back to a book I wrote, which reaches back to that whole experience that I was describing. To me, that's the hopeful part of it. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh man, Dave, I'm sorry that happened. That is a part of it. You've got to acknowledge that.
Right, right.
But then the rest of it is, it doesn't have to be that way. Can we lock arms now and walk forward and do things differently? Mm-hmm. That's the hopeful part of this.
Yep.
So that's what I'm grateful for.
Yeah, there's definitely a core belief within the church about that. I want to go back about 20 years now as we're continuing to follow this timeline, and you're about to move into your current location out in the valley, which I'll get to. But I don't know if I ever told you this, but I was invited to go attend a service for Windsor Crossing.
Yeah.
2001, I don't remember when. Because, and I'm going to go ahead and name drop here with somebody. Our next door neighbor, I knew, attended this church.
Yeah.
And at all hours of the day, you'd hear boom, 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 do, 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 boom, do, do, do. And the walls, like, he's a drummer, and his name's Brian Trippy.
Yeah.
And his wife, Pat.
Of course.
And such gracious neighbors. You need to come to church. You need to.
Yeah.
And Susan, my wife, and I were very happy with our current church at the time. We weren't looking, but we wanted to be neighborly and friendly. Sure, we'll go. And I'm sitting there, and as you know my story, I don't come from a church background, so I didn't know how to define church. I didn't know. All I knew was the church where I was attending, that was church. Mm-hmm. It was pretty traditional.
Mm-hmm.
I go to this Windsor Crossing, and I'm a big music guy, and I'm like, wow, these people are amazingly good musicians. But then at the end, you invited people up on stage. Like, are you allowed to do this at church?
Hmm.
And Brian goes, come on, let's go up on stage. I'm like, no, I'm just going to, I don't do that. I don't want to get attention. And all of these people, half the, maybe there's a couple hundred people there at the time because it's still relatively small.
Yeah.
Half the people jump up on stage and they're all dancing. I'm like, okay, I'm not sure what to make of this. So I don't think I ever told you that, but I thank Brian and I said, that was very interesting. I love the message. Robin happened to sing that day, and he's like, that's his wife. I'm like, what a terrific voice. He gives a great message, but I just want to be kind of like this.
That's
my style. Isn't it fascinating to know, and I'll go ahead and jump ahead, that my wife and I would go back there when you're in the current building in 06, and we've never left. Mm-hmm. So we're about to celebrate our 17th year there, which is amazing.
And you guys are part of our regular dance team now, too. Yes. Isn't that the rest of the story?
Yes, it is. Now the security, like, tackles me because I want to get up on stage and dance.
Man, I don't even remember what that weekend was. And
I don't
we don't do a lot of dancing on the stage. But yeah, you were there.
It was that one time.
All right.
And everyone was having a good time.
That's awesome.
So anyway, about that time, we're getting into 2003. Let's pick the story. You guys now are expanding, and you're looking for a permanent place now.
Yeah, yeah, we are. So the church, by God's grace, it grew. And we began to see that growth pretty early on. But then, you know, as things happen, you get to that. It's a kind of a tipping point thing, right, where there's a momentum that's now going, and people are inviting their friends, and it's beginning to happen. So we go from, I remember when the theater at the YMCA holds about 350 people. I distinctly remember the weekend that I told folks. Now, I'd already cleared this with the board. We'd already been planning for it, but it was like, gang, we need to go to two services. We need to split this up. And that means some of you are going to be at a 9 o'clock, some of you are going to be at 11 o'clock. And I remember a guy taking me up in the corner and chewing me out after church and going, it took us years to fill this theater, and now you're splitting this up. And I remember I could feel it from him, that it was like, oh, I don't want to start to feel like a failure again. I said, watch what God does, though, because we've got to make room for folks. And so we did that. And then with those two services filled, but we don't own that building, right? So we couldn't do a Saturday service. We had to be out of there. We couldn't even do a third service on a Sunday morning. We had a very strict window that we had at the YMCA because they were opening it for folks to come in and work out.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing we did was we put people in a side hallway, and we ran a little video feed out there so that they could watch it out there. And if you were new, you got to sit in the room, and we had a jump zone where people sat there and volunteered. It's like we could tap you on the shoulder, and you had to jump out, and you'd go sit in the not great seats. And it was just sort of a cool thing that people said, I'll do that. If somebody new is here, they get to sit in the room. Then the Y had a kind of a multi-purpose room really on the other side of their complex, and we got permission to rent that out. And so then we would run a cable all the way down there, and it was really our first sort of multi-site church, because we're here live and we're talking to hundreds of people that are worshiping live on a screen down there with a live band and all of that. So we stretched that YMCA thing as far as we could. But we knew someone had given us a donation early on when this was happening and said, you've got a year. Like, I was in a conversation with somebody after church. This is when we're really starting to blow and go a little bit. And he tucked an envelope underneath my arm, and I just kind of smiled and said, hey, thanks. He said, just read this later. Well, everybody leaves. I'm on my way home. So I'm walking out to the car. I thought, well, I'll just open it before I get in the car. I sit down in the car and read it, and it was essentially, it was a check. It was the intent to give, and this is what it was. Essentially, what he said is, you've got 1 year, and it starts right now. If this amount can go towards purchase of land, then that's where it's going. If in 1 year you haven't done that, then this amount that I've indicated right here goes into my second favorite nonprofit. We were on the clock, Dave.
Yeah.
And so I go to the board and say, well, we were feeling it, but now we've been challenged by a donor. And so it sort of got us off the schneid a little bit, to be honest with you. And we began to look. And then, by golly, it just sounds like a cliche, but there were two sisters that were going to sell a piece of land in Chesterfield Valley. And through one of our attorneys, we were able to talk with them, and we purchased those 35 acres. And, you know, we began to raise money. The church is growing. We're dreaming. And one of the phrases that we used that we still use is, we were doing this for people whose names we didn't know yet.
Mm.
And it was all about the future. And it was all about, okay, God, what are you doing? And that first site opened, and, you know, we built this thing in phases. We planned for those phases. We felt like God was leading us to something. We had 35 acres, which we purchased for for just under $500,000 in Chesterfield Valley. Not a bad deal.
Yeah, right, right.
Now, I will say this, Dave, just to kind of get the rest of it to show how it was God doing this. There was no water out there. There was no sewer out there. Electricity was it. So for us to ever have this, we were going to have, obviously, water. And at first, we were on a septic system, right? So MSD wasn't out there. Water wasn't out there. We're on the other side of the airport. Nothing has been developed in the west end of the valley. Nothing.
There's basically the airport.
It's the airport. And it was kind of the dividing line. If you were on the other side of that, there was a golf course and that was it. Mm-hmm. So nothing. All of a sudden, really for just a very short window of time, if you look back on it, just a few years, the president of the water company, the guy moves from Connecticut, comes down here and starts attending the church, is a Christ follower, and he happens to be the president of the water company. And so when Eric begins to hear, this is what we're doing, I'm like, Eric, how do we do this? Well, we have a meeting with the man who at that time was overseeing the airport. We get all of our folks together. Well, wait a minute, if you can do this, then we'll allow this. And if you do that, it was really, really quite a negotiation. And we were able to, the water company, we paid for it. The airport was glad to help because it helped them with further development. We ran a water main under, like the edge, the far edge of one of those runways. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way that we were able to even do this. So it's like God at every turn was going, seems crazy. That's a cornfield.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. And he did. He did.
And bringing the right people in at
all
the right time.
All of the right people. And it goes back to what I said earlier. This wasn't me. This was God just continuing to surround us with people at very specific moments with gifts and wisdom and ability and talents. And it's like, oh, okay. And we just kept following him.
And of course, you've had expansions. You've added on to the physical church.
Yes.
And then eventually,
yeah,
other places,
yeah.
Fenton,
yeah.
Mid River St. Peter's area,
right.
More recently, a couple of years ago, in Grants Trail. So now,
yeah.
As you like to say, one church, many locations,
that's it,
right?
That's it. But that was a conscious decision. There was a leadership moment. Because I will tell you, going in, we had 35 acres. And there were a couple of benchmarks out there for us of larger churches in remember, this church was pretty much born in the early 90s in the era of some mega churches,
yeah,
right? And we never set out to be a mega church. We just didn't. I mean, the joke was it took us years to even get a sign out on the road. You had to want it. You had to come find us, right? And usually that's because you were on the arm of a friend. But our initial plan was, yep, let's scale this thing out and we'll be one church, one big church on this one site. And I was afforded the opportunity to be a part of a leadership development experience where I would go into Dallas a couple of three times a year and be mentored by other pastors. And again, what is that? That's an opportunity. That's God doing that. You know, that came to me. I didn't think that was a good idea. It was like God gave me that. Mm-hmm. And part of that was it was younger pastors of growing churches, and so we were all kind of dealing with things. Well, two of the guys who basically helped formulate this, what we now call multi-site churches, where you have one location, but there are different ways to do it, but you have one church in many locations. And I remember coming back to our board of directors at that time and to our lead team and saying, I think God's leading us to do something different than build one massive 8,000, 10,000 seat auditorium. I don't want to do that. And I remember saying to them, when it is time for me to toss the keys to someone, I do not want to toss the keys and say, hey, good luck filling that big monstrosity and good luck with that house payment. I remember saying that to them. And we began to pray about it. It's like, well, what would this look like? Well, one of those mentors, Larry Osborne, was really one of the people who essentially invented this video form of church where you're in one location and you're teaching in various locations. And I remember talking with Larry about that and saying, I think this is what God's leading us to. And I know you guys do a conference where you sort of teach people that. I said, so I think I'm going to bring my team to one of the conferences. And he looks at me and he goes, don't do that. He said, if you do that, you're going to pay money, and then you're going to be sitting in the back row of a big conference with a whole bunch of other churches, and you'll get all of the information you need, but don't do that. Why don't you go talk to your board and your lead team, and let's get the date on the books right. But I want you to just come out to San Diego and just sit in my living room. And for 3 days, how about a flip chart, and I'll just teach you everything I know. Dave, I didn't do that. This is, again, God's immense grace going, yep, yep, yep. And so the board went out. Our lead team went out. We began to learn these things. Then we came back and said, how are we going to do this, our version of this? And then that was kind of the launching of first our Fenton campus and then that campus at Mid River St. Peter's. And then, like you said, most recently in South County, really right on the edge of the city there. It butts up next to Grants Trail, hence Grants Trail.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm going to throw out a term, and it's got different meaning depending on where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Seeker church.
Yeah.
Now, some people hear that and go, oh, that sounds great because I've got a lot of questions. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Others will say, yeah, that's not for me. That just means a bunch of newbies. They don't know what they're doing, and that it's catering just to new people. I'm an established Christian.
Right.
I know, I read my Bible every day. But you've never shied away from that, of that term to say, we would like to think that we can cater to everyone, for people who grew up in the faith and really know the Bible front and back, to your neighbor who might be struggling with all of this and trying to figure out even who Jesus is. Yeah. How do you navigate that to try to be the church for a lot of different backgrounds? Yeah.
Okay, so nobody's going to be the church for all people. We said that earlier, right? I understand different worship styles, different traditions, and we love, you know, there's so many, we're just blessed with so many great churches in the St. Louis area. We've never shied away from being a place that is open to those who are searching. Now, that term seeker became a thing back in, I'm going to say, the 80s, 1980s. For your younger viewers, that was a century, like previous century. And so there were churches that said and called themselves seeker churches. In that day, there was kind of a church model where they would have seeker services. So your weekend services were geared towards seekers, which meant there was very little worship, because in those days people thought, or at least that was the model, that, well, you can't worship in front of these people, you don't take communion in front of these people, you only keep the message at a certain level. And then in the midweek you would have a believer's service, whatever term you would, or you know, whatever you would call that service. So you'd have that service on Wednesdays for your faithful, I want to get into the word, Christian. And then on the weekends, you'd have something that was at a different level.
Yeah.
We, from the moment I came on board and we were able to begin to sort of lay out what God was showing us, we began to really just call out the inadequacies of that model. I believe that God's word, the genius of God's word, is that it's going to work for all of us, and I do believe that it is practical and it is relevant to all of us. And I don't believe, and we began to see this in the, and I guess now we're in the late 90s, we began to see that there was a longing for that next generation of be transparent with me. Tell me what the whole deal is. You see, I didn't ever want it to be, and I know churches didn't do this, but sometimes the vibe was like, well, you do this on the weekends, but if you want to learn the secret handshake, then you come on Wednesdays. And we wanted to do this in front of people, which meant we started worshiping more and more and more. I told people, just, you know, we will celebrate communion because God has called us to that. And to this day, Dave, you know this, we will tell people this is what communion is, and we're going to celebrate that. And it really, if you're not at that place in your faith journey where where you can understand the meaning of this, then don't do it. Mm-hmm. But do understand that we are doing this in front of you to celebrate our faith and to remind you that you matter that much to God. So for us, it was always going to be that both and, which completely opened us up to a different level of teaching, a different level of worship. Sometimes we'll take entire books of the Bible and go through them, whether it's the book of Acts a couple of years ago, the book of Revelation, and we'll go through that. Sometimes it's very topical, like the one that we just went through. These are some of the issues and struggles of our day, and how does the Bible speak to those? So we'll do both of those, but what opens us up is to say, yes, there are people who are searching, seeking if you want. That's a good biblical word, Matthew 7, 7. If you seek, you will find. It's a great word. So I think we're all there trying to figure this out, and I hope we're all still searching and seeking and taking that next step towards him.
That's exactly right. In my introduction at the beginning, I had talked about now this global reach of the crossing. This isn't something that happens overnight, but it also has to be intentional. So explore this a little bit, and maybe we start with Living Water. I think that's a good place to start. What is the mindset of you as lead pastor and of staff and of the church to say, yeah, we're physically located here in St. Louis, but we're called to serve in not only other parts of St. Louis, but around the world? That seems to a lot of people, that's too much. It's too big of a vision.
Yeah.
But you've not been intimidated by that.
Well, okay, I want to start off by saying sometimes you can have a vision that is, maybe it's not too big, but it's unfocused.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that I will hopefully lovingly help younger pastors that we get to coach and work with here and around the country is don't ever suffer from ministerial ADD. So you've got this cause this month, and it's a good cause. And man, you get your church going there, but then 2 months later, you come back from a conference and it's like, oh boy, no, it's got to be this one. And before you know it, you're ping-ponging your folks through something and they get worn out. There's a fatigue there.
I see that in the corporate world too.
It happens. Mm-hmm. And it happens, I think, from a good heart. It's someone who's going, man, we got to change the world and I want to do my part. But if we're not careful, we're going to stretch our folks too thin. So I think you can have a big vision, but it needs to be focused. And so for us, the focus was water is a thing, and it is a practical crisis that's happening in our world. And when people have clean water and sanitation and hygiene, they live a different level of life. They have a chance to move out of poverty. Young women who are on their way to the well each day to get water that's going to make their family sick anyway, they're not endangered. They're not going to disappear and be trafficked. There's all sorts of things that you push back on, all sorts of darkness, if there is access to clean water. And if we teach them about sanitation and hygiene practices, then diseases go down. So for us, that became a really practical thing, and we got a chance to partner with an organization that is brilliant at this and is very open about talking about Jesus and spreading the gospel. In fact, they will partner with local churches in those villages to say, you help us maintain this water system. You help us in the educating of the village. So it really became a thing for us where it was like, yeah, let's do this. And so we started small. We started in a couple of areas. But in reality, what we did was we got to a place where they began to come to us and say, well, how about this? How about this? How about this? And our church is still very involved in addressing the water crisis around the world. Now, couple that with that Genius of One course that I talked about earlier. What Living Water began to see, as other organizations have, is that this is a practical course that translates across cultures. So now we're training pastors in Central America, as you said, in Africa, where you've been, in Southern Asia, And we're equipping them. We're giving these things away. We're not charging them. We're giving these things away. And these churches are getting healthier physically. Their villages are getting healthier. And emotionally and relationally, they're getting healthier too. I think that's where you started to see it really wrap around the globe. Mm-hmm.
Let's bring this back home in St. Louis. You are a St. Louisan.
Yeah.
I'm a St. Louisan. It is easy, I think, to look at problems in big cities, and in particular our hometown, and say, it's just not going to work.
Right.
We've tried everything.
Right.
You know, we did the Arch and Bush Stadium expansion in the 60s, and that was going to do it. Yeah, it didn't really take. We did the whole Union Station thing in the 80s, and that was great for a while. Yeah, that didn't really take.
Yeah.
And it's easy just out of fatigue to say whatever. Greg, you've never given up on your hometown. Mm. And so you have been personally active. You've been professionally active. I know the Crossing is active. Great things. And I wish we had time to get into everything that Andre Alexander is doing.
Yeah.
How we've poured into people like David Hawkins in the Metro East Side. But I really want you to talk about St. Louis in particular and what you see happening here. And what some people would almost say is, well, it's kind of a naivete.
Yeah.
To think that this problem, we can actually solve it. But you think it's possible.
Yeah. Well, I think hope is more than a word. I know that sounds like a cliche, but we live by hope. And the way we live by hope as Christ followers is we take the long view. I think you have to take the long view. I think you have to be realistic about everything you just said. We've tried things, and they didn't work. They didn't take. You have to be realistic about the crime rates. You have to be realistic about divides that have scarred our community for generations. You have to face those things out loud. And yet, I don't think God is finished with this community. I really don't. So what's the way forward? Because otherwise, it is naive. Just to say those things, it's naive. So where it gets interesting is when it practically begins to happen. So for me, it does come down to things that are relational. It comes down to partnerships. Because in those partnerships, people on both sides of it have an opportunity to be healed. So a church like the Crossing gets to partner with some of the folks that you've mentioned, Andre and David and other organizations. And we partner not just financially, though that's a part of it, but we volunteer together. We work together. We get our hands dirty together. And so what happens is the change and the blessing starts flowing both ways. It isn't somebody coming in as sort of a savior and saying, hey, we're going to rescue you. It's both ways, and we're learning as we go. And then other people say, well, wait, I want to be a part of that. And you begin to see a creativity that sparks. And so I see that in everything from a Red Tails really aviation program with a partnership between us and the Ferguson-Florissant School District. And, you know, honoring just a handful of students that go through an interview process and maintain a certain GPA who are interested in aeronautics and giving them a chance to be around airplanes and to learn and to get their private pilot's license through people who are now you've got people that are piling in from Boeing and from Spirit Airport and pilots that are saying, wait, we want to help with that. Well, that's not the Crossing. The Crossing started a partnership with Ferguson-Florissant School District, but then what happened was you get out of the way and other people want to be a part of this thing. So you've just sort of brokered a relationship, people sitting around a table, and then watch what happens. Mm-hmm. I could give you example after example, some of the reading programs that we're doing, some of the things that we're doing in South City and South County that are just profoundly effective for third graders who are learning how to read. Well, it isn't us saying, okay, we've got all the ideas, now we're going to force our way in. You start with these relationships and say, what can we do together? So, Dave, I think you pick something and say, all right, what are we going to do together? Mm-hmm. But then you have to endure for a period of time.
That's right.
You got to take the long view. You've heard me say this before. I do think we will see some changes in my lifetime. I do. Because of what we're doing and because of how we're doing it. One of our sort of phrases that comes up often is, how we do what we do is as important as what we do. we can, just how we partner together can begin to change a culture in a city that has forgotten how to get along.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not telling you we're there yet. I'm telling you, when I go into meetings, when I'm around government officials, that is a challenge. It is a thing that I'm going to say, how are we doing this differently than we've done it in the past? Because when I don't want them to say what they said about the 60s or the 80s. Let's not be a part of that litany.
Well, it's also a country that has forgotten how to get along. And changing topics, we just kind of went through it during COVID.
Yeah.
And I know this breaks your heart when you see the effect that it had on the church, and in particular, good friends of yours, church leaders around the country. And I'm thinking of one particular man in Atlanta, but just saying, I don't think I want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
There's too much divisiveness.
Yeah.
And now politics has seeped in into this.
Yeah.
Greg, as a lead pastor, how do you navigate through that? How do you, I don't know that it's possible that you appease everybody necessarily, but when somebody says, well, I don't agree with your mask policy.
Yeah.
Well, this is why we're doing this. Well, I'm leaving the church.
Yeah.
Other people who are just other pastors in other parts of the country just getting lambasted by people that they had always been right next to for years and decades. There's been a lot of hurt. You speak personally to that.
Yeah.
What did you see through that, and how did you navigate through it?
Well, there was a lot to that question. So I'll start with the personal first. I think I remember when the when this thing really started to, like, we all knew, oh boy, this is going to happen. I remember that. And we can talk about the process of how we led through that, because I was so proud of our staff. But I remember the I remember the is Harvard Business Review that said, and I was sharing this with our staff, said most crises are overmanaged and underled. And I think the overmanaging part is because we want to be in control of everything. So the reason I bring that up is I can't manage all of the reactions of all of the people in, let's just say, our church. I can't. That's like a control that I don't have. It's above my pay grade. I shouldn't be trying to control people that way, right? So what does that mean? That means that when people have those reactions, strong reactions, emotional reactions to any number of things, first thing I'm going to remind myself of is, okay, I get that. You're coming at this from there's something underneath the surface of what you're telling me that is real. You're concerned about this or this or this, and people will give me those answers of, you know, I'm worried about. And then you just go through the litany of things that people are worried about. Well, that's legitimate. You've got to start by acknowledging that. When somebody gets angry because, you know, we're going to do things this way as we navigate through the crisis, as best I can, I got to try not to take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard when sometimes your name is on the rock that's being, you know, thrown at your head. And I think that's where a lot of pastors felt it.
Yeah.
Not me, Dave. I got to tell you, we were so blessed. Yes, I had a few difficult conversations, but I'm so grateful for the way our folks navigated through it. I'm quite sure. I know that there were people who said, yeah, we're going to leave because we didn't like the way you were doing that. Okay. Okay. But I can't overmanage that. But I don't want to underlead it either, right? And so what is the leading? Well, the leading is keeping our collective eye on the ball. What is the vision that God has called us to? What is the long-term goal of us that we're pursuing? What's the long-term effect of us tearing each other apart? And so what we tried to do was to keep our eye on this longer-term vision and to continually remind people of that, even as we kept telling folks, we're not going to agree, we're going to have these bumps. Oh, yeah. And how we do what we do matters as much as what we do. So how we treat each other, how we navigate these conversations in healthy, loving ways. Can you keep asking one more curious question before you blow that person up? Can we be wise in the use of our words on social media. So you hear us talking about those things even today. And I think that's the general approach. When I talk to other pastors, you know, some of them, they hit the off-ramp early and they did retire, or they did resign and say, I'm going to go into the marketplace. And I just feel for them. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that every pastor did everything right. I'm sure not saying I navigated and took every right step in that 3 years of whatever we were going through. But I do know those folks were facing tough stuff and trying to do their best. I do know that many of the people I talked to do not have that blessing of a safe community around them that I have, that you know I have, that I can say things and I can say, well, wait, help me with this, or where's the blind spot or whatever. And mostly what I can be told is, hey, Greg, you're not alone. We're with you. You're not crazy. Let's keep going. And then those leaders are reminding me of the goal and the vision and the hope. And that's how you take the long view.
And part of this is financial. Let's call it out. Unfortunately, a lot of churches have never recovered. Many have gone under because they've never come back from the pre-COVID days and the giving dropped off.
Yeah.
You are one of the most humble people I know, and you are never going to take credit for anything, and that's fine. However, something worked here because I've seen the Crossing finances. It's public to anyone who wants to go there. There's never been a drop-off.
Yeah.
Giving has continued to move higher. That also didn't happen at most churches. It's not supposed to happen. It happened at the Crossing. Why?
Well, I will say that churches, now that we've kind of stepped back away from it, I would say that churches of a certain size, many of them did experience something like what you're describing. Because, to be honest with you, there were some people that were not as affected economically by what we went through as other people were. And so you would see giving go down in some churches, but then it would recover. You would see some churches that just had a steady increase because, to be honest with you, they did cut costs. And in some cases, they did lay off. And in some cases, you know, a variety of things happened. But there was a faithfulness of giving across the board for a number of churches where people rallied and said, we're in, we're with you, we're not going anywhere. I think what we're seeing now is, I'm really out of my lane, so you'll have to tell me what you think, but there are a variety of shapes to economic recoveries, right? There's the V shape that, you know, it's a pretty sharp down and it's a pretty sharp up. There's the L, which is going to be a longer, tougher, and then there's that K sort of thing. And so my understanding of a K recovery is, so you have some industries that they take the sharp down, but then they're going to recover. Mm-hmm. And then you have some that are, it's going to be a tougher go and they're not going to recover as quickly.
Yep.
We see that. And so for us, first of all, we want to be aware at our church of both of those economic realities live in our church, right? So we want to be aware that there are people who are really still experiencing a kind of growth and a financial blessing. And there are others that are not and that are struggling. So, the answer to your question is we want to be really transparent about that. We want to be really open about that. We want to be reminding our folks, first of all, if you're in an industry that is on the downturn, you're not alone. And how can we come alongside you? And if you're in an industry that is on the upturn, let's be the church. Mm-hmm. Let's come alongside people. Let's keep thinking of ways to encourage and mentor and even invest financially in helping our community. But it was always about the vision God has called us to, Dave. You know, that's to me where God sustained us through this was he gave us a vision. He gave us a vision of what we were going to do and the meaning and the purpose. I think long before this thing happened, he created a culture in us that was not perfect. I know I've said that, not perfect, but as best we can, healthy. And it gave us, I think it gave us more margin than some people had to even disagree.
Right.
and to even go, you know what, I'm not coming for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then people come back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, I told you so. There's no, this is what you did wrong or this is what you did wrong. It's like, okay, how do we keep moving forward now?
Yep.
And I think that's how God led us. We were really intentional during that period. We were really intentional of how we led. And I would say one of the things, if you want to just, you know, one of the not so secret ingredients of the leadership culture at the Crossing is what we call, and it's not my term, it's Ed Friedman, really, I think in his Failure of Leadership book was the first place I noticed it. We wanted a non-anxious presence. There was so much anxiety in the world. We were not going to not tell the truth. We were going to tell you, this is what we know. This is how things are working. This is our best shot at it. But this is how we're going to keep moving. It's more that leading versus overmanaging. Mm-hmm. So we'll tell you what we know, what we don't know. This is where God's leading us. Let's do this together. But as best we could, it was with a non-anxious presence, because anxiety is so contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all doom scroll and look at things, and we were doing it during the shutdown and after the shutdown, and how long is this going to take? And so we were trying our best to lead with that non-anxious presence.
Greg, you've been really good with your time. I just have one more question. I think this is kind of an important one in today's culture and in today's world. The power of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You believe in it like nobody's business. Your wife, Robin, I don't know of anyone who...
That's right.
We're going to pray about this right
now. That's it.
And
that's
man,
right.
She can pray big. When I look at the world, I think it's easy to say, I'm going to pray about something in my own little world, okay? Or I'm going to give a prayer of thanks. Thank you, Lord, for everything that I have. My vats are full. I've got good health, all that good stuff. Or I've got an issue at work with someone. I'd like to pray about that. When we look at what's happening in the Middle East, when we look at what's happening in Ukraine, when we look at these big issues, I think it's easy to say, oh, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
God's really going to hear little old me say a big prayer about peace in Israel and in Gaza. It's almost like, why bother? I'm going to go back and just pray about my little corner of the world. Mm. Could you help other faith-based believers, prayer worshipers out there, to say it's okay to pray big prayers? I mean, what would your advice be to people who feel it's too big, it's too overwhelming?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the most famous prayer that I'm going to say just about all of us know. When the disciples said to Jesus, will you teach us how to pray the way you pray? Right? We call it the Lord's Prayer. But tucked right in the middle of it is, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So Jesus is teaching us, even in that prayer, God, have your way on earth now, just as it is in the heavens. So if I get that from the mouth of Jesus himself, then I'm on pretty solid ground to say it's okay to pray those kinds of prayers. But what I would also say is it's okay to start really very small and personal. So in 1 Peter 5, when it says, cast your anxieties on him, what does that mean? It means I pray what I'm worrying about. It means I pray what is present. God, I can't sleep tonight because I just read that headline about what's happening in Gaza, that thing that's happening in Tel Aviv, that thing that's happening in Ukraine, that thing that's happening in the city, that's happening in my suburb, that's happening wherever it is. You confess that to him. You cast that upon him. God, I'm worried about this. And you ask for him to meet you there. And then you begin to sense that God is there. Now, the rest of that verse is cast your anxiety on him. Why? Peter says, because he cares for you. And so if I begin with a really personal, private prayer that even sounds like, I don't know what to say, God. I don't know what to say. I just know that I'm churned up. you're casting your anxiety on him, and you keep talking and you keep praying. And somewhere in there, you're going to begin to put a little bit more to it. And okay, you know what? God, now I'm praying for this. And now I'm praying for this. And I think over time, God shows us how to pray those bigger and bigger prayers. And I do believe prayer makes a difference. And I am taking the long view on things. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to see some miraculous turnaround in the Middle East because I prayed. You know, I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but I'm not taking the short view. I'm taking the long view. And Dave, you've heard me say this before. When I bring these things to God, here's what I'm absolutely convinced of. He's not surprised. He's not intimidated. He's not overwhelmed. He's not completely flummoxed by this, going, golly, I don't know what to do with this. I think my view of prayer is he's now leaning in and going, oh, you want to join me in this? Mm-hmm. Keep talking to me, and I'll keep pouring into you, and I'll keep listening. And I just think prayer matters.
Yeah, absolutely. This is why you do what you do, and you're very good at it. So very well stated. Let me end with this.
Okay.
This is turning back on something that you do in your own podcast, which I think is a beautiful way to end, where you will ask your guests, let's do a way to go award.
Yeah. Right,
all right?
Right.
Point out a person, point out an organization, whatever, and just say way to go. You want to recognize this person or this entity.
Yeah.
I want to end by doing that for you.
Yeah.
So you take that.
Well, we were already talking about this, but I want to say way to go to any leader. So that's a pastor, that's a small business owner, that's that could be a teacher in a classroom, it could be a principal, it could be anyone who over these past 3.5 years has been trying to navigate the waters well. None of us fully knew what we were getting into, and there were a lot of times that it was like, okay, we're done. Oh, not quite. There were a lot of times where it's like, I think this is the right decision, and then you have to readjust. I just want to say way to go to all of the people who have not just endured, but people who are getting up every day and stepping into their job, into their calling, into their place in this world and going, okay, next step, what are we going to do? And I would say for most of them, the last 3.5 years were, let's just use the word, interesting. And way to go. You navigated through this. You kept your company off of the rocks. You kept your classroom moving in the right direction. You kept your church moving. Way to go. Because it wasn't easy.
No.
And the world needs people like that who are going to keep this thing moving forward.
Yeah. There wasn't a handbook about that, was
no,
there?
No, I didn't. Nobody that. Told me where it was.
Exactly. I missed it. Well, Greg Holder, lead pastor of The Crossing, thank you for your time. I appreciate the way that you lead. I appreciate the way that you love on people, and I appreciate your friendship.
Yeah, well, right back at you, Dave. So grateful to be here, and thank you for what you do. Thank you for the way you pour into me. As a fellow leader, and and thanks for having me today.
All right, lots to talk to. I'm going to have you back at some point, and it'll be sooner rather than later. All right, thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you again next time. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening, and please forward the link to this podcast to friends, family, neighbors, even strangers. They'll thank you later. If you'd like more information on our wealth management team, just go to your search engine and type in Simons and Cordes, S-I-M-O-N-S, and Cordes, Simons and Cordes. And the website will be the first thing that pops up. I'll talk to you again soon on the next episode of the Simon Says podcast.